Welcome to Under the Abbey Stand. I'm Declan Lohurst, and fresh off another Abbey Stand Ghost Pod, we're back to re-record the season preview. A lot happened after we recorded our last pod, so we're going to give it another go and keep you up to date with what's happening, all things Cambridge United. I've got with me the usual suspects, Jordan Warland. Welcome.
Lovely to see your face, Jack Sundlehurst. Hello, everyone.
I've got Owen Kiernan.
Hello, good evening.
And Tom Walker.
I feel much more positive than this time last week. Good to be back.
In a way, I think it is brilliant that we're re-recording, because yeah, there was it was a long old pod last time, and it was quite dark last time, some of the stuff on there. So yeah, good to go again, and plenty to get our teeth into. I think first things first, let's look at a pretty successful run out away at Birmingham in the League Cup, and Jordan, a pretty good result from that game, if the game itself wasn't particularly enjoyable.
I don't know, mate. I found the game quite enjoyable, personally, especially the first half. I thought the first half we played some nice football. I thought we played it out from the back, and we were playing into positions, and Wes on the right and Luke Hannett on the left were very lively, and we were making the most of that. Yeah, I thought it was quite enjoyable. Maybe it was a bit harder second half, as you would maybe expect. Birmingham came after us a little bit. Having said that, Mithoff didn't really have a lot to do. Perhaps that'll be a story for the season, if Robbie Cundy's going to put his head on everything and the ball doesn't get anywhere near the 18-yard box. But I'd be worried if I was a Birmingham fan. I didn't think they looked particularly great. And I guess you could maybe chalk it up as a bit of a pre-season game and a bit of a nothing, but they didn't look particularly great. But we're not here to talk about Birmingham. I liked that Villa boy Harvey Nibbs enjoyed the win. Good for him. Yeah, I thought it was good. I thought it was interesting that pre-game the BBC was saying that this was maybe a game that we would sort of look to lose and it's not really worth sort of continuing. But I don't know, a cup run isn't something to be sniffed at, even if there is no money in the League Cup. The round two draw is pretty unexciting, but I don't know. I guess just in terms of a first look at the squad, a first look at the new players, it was a really positive experience, and it was great to see the Digger have a fantastic game.
Yeah, good stuff. Newport in the next round isn't the most glamorous of ties, but certainly a potential for Cambridge United to get through. Owen, how did you feel about the Birmingham game and how Cambridge looked in that?
Echo what Jordan said. I think we looked fairly solid, really, from what I've seen of it. It's my concern is that we beat Championship opposition in the first round of the League Cup the previous season, and we all got excited and we thought, all right, we're going to beat Brentford, they're going to be up there. Yeah, fantastic. We're gonna go on and have a great season, and we really didn't. So I'm tempering my opposition, my enthusiasm a little bit. It was good. It's good. You know, clean sheet is good. You know, that'll do. Mitov wonders in his quest to nail down a starting spot. It'll, you know, also do his confidence good. Taylor and Cundy both together at the back there. You know, hopefully, you know, for a centre back, Taylor doesn't really get many goals. So hopefully, Cundy can improve on that position, which is something we've lacked for a few seasons now. Goal scoring centre back, probably since Leon Legg, really. And yeah, you know, great to see Wes Hoolihan finally play for Cambridge in a competitive game.
Can I just say something really quickly for those that might not know Owen? He was on a romantic weekend in London with his fiance on what was meant to be his wedding weekend that's been postponed, and yet he still managed time to watch Cambridge United play. So that's a real highlight from Saturday as well. So well done, Owen.
Cheers.
Right, let's bring in Tom Walker. We watched the game together, me and you, Tom, and it was good to see Cambridge United, you know, back in action and back out on the field.
Thanks for the invite there, Jack.
Oh, yeah, we just, last minute decision, bumped into each other.
In the hot tub, mate. I heard.
But, well, yeah, that was post-game.
Celebrating.
It was great.
Celebrating style.
Couldn't have thought of a better Saturday.
Yeah, I'd probably take a bit of what Jordan said and a bit of what Owen said. You know, obviously, a really good win, firstly. You know, it's a Championship team. It's not I don't think the team that we started with every week. I think if you look at what a lot of the Birmingham fans were saying, they sort of said that the back of the team was pretty much what they would expect. And sort of going forward, it was a bit makeshift, which maybe explains why it was maybe a bit more comfortable than what you might expect. I think other than a really good long shot from them in the first half, which I think hit the bar, I don't think there was really a moment in the game where we were sort of in any real danger. I think I probably said, echo what Jordan said really, in that the first half was pretty impressive. I think actually, caused them a lot of problems, especially the front two. I thought Ironside and Mullin, as it was on the day, two guys who put themselves around a lot, caused the centre backs a lot of problems, and you can't really ask too much more of them than that against essentially a Championship back line. And I thought throughout the spine of the team, kind of contrary to the thoughts that I had in the pod, which we did record last week, which will not be released, and none of the content for it will be released. I thought the spine of the team looked really strong. And for me, that was the most encouraging thing. Obviously, Cundy is someone we didn't see anything of pre-season. We don't know anything about him. He's never been playing in the Football League. Goal on his debut, man of the match on his debut. Can't ask too much more than that. I thought Greg looked very solid, and the midfield too. The digger was excellent, absolutely superb. Just he was in the game that followed against Fulham, but O'Neill as well. Unfortunately had to go off, but they look like a really decent pairing on the day. But again, a bit like Owen said, I am wary not to read too much into it. Bonner said that this was going to be an extension of pre-season before the game, assuming he was expecting a defeat, and that we could look back on that as a sort of it's not as bad as it seems. So in the same vein, we can't get too carried away just because we've won. Would you rather win or lose a game like that? Of course you'd rather win it. The second round and then the third round draw, which they did for some reason after, it was a bit disappointing, a little bit boring, but I think positives all round. Really, really good start to the season.
Yeah, Cundy was such a surprise. Like Tom said, we hadn't seen him so far in pre-season. He picked up an injury sort of in training, but he was sort of thrown into the side because Harry Darling obviously picked up an injury, and straight away that kind of throws a few red flags, doesn't it? With one injury in defence and already we're sort of a little bit short, but for someone to come in and play a full 90 without many minutes behind him in pre-season, I thought he was superb. Really, really good in the air. And it's quite exciting, actually, because last season we didn't really have a lot of aerial threats, whereas this year we've got Cundy, we've got the digger, Iredale, the left back looks fairly tall, and Ironside up top as well. So it's nice to see a strength in the squad that we didn't have before. And I think that will do us well, because we've got a couple of decent crosses in the side with Wes and with Leon and even Dunk and Hannant, obviously, who got the assist for the goal. It's good to see that sort of new addition and new strength added to the squad.
On Ironside, he started up top with Paul Mullin. What are people's thoughts on his performance?
I thought, like I said, I think they put themselves around really well. If I'm absolutely honest, it's not the front two that I would go with. It's not the combination I would necessarily want to see us playing with too regularly. It does feel very much more like a sort of backs against the wall away front two, in that they're both going to sort of work really hard, run the channels, get at the centre backs. But I would like to see Harvey Nibb starting as often as possible. But I appreciate why that didn't happen against Birmingham. Ironside looks like a real nuisance for centre-backs. We've not seen enough of him to judge yet. I'm not convinced he's quite as refined as someone like Mullin in terms of his sort of maybe natural footballing abilities, we say. I don't want to be too harsh, but certainly in terms of the problems that he poses, centre-backs can be a very useful option. Whether that's starting in games like that, where you're maybe away at a top team, or sort of coming off the bench later on in a game that maybe where we need a goal. So again, really encouraging, but particularly impressed by Paul Mullin. And I think on the basis of that performance, it backs up what we said, you know, a few months ago, just after this, you know, the signing was confirmed. And I think what we kind of said between ourselves that that's a really good sign at this level, and it's one that I think is going to prove really useful across this year.
I was a little bit surprised that Ironside started. I thought we would see Mullin and Nibbs. I think, like Tom, that's probably my preference for the season, as much as possible. And I see Ironside as more of a an impact player, maybe coming in to change a game, or maybe if we're changing tactics, we're playing away and we might not have as many people up top. So I was surprised to see him start. I was surprised to see him start with two up top as well. But fair play to Bonner. I think the reason that we performed so well in the first, definitely the first half, maybe the first hour of the game, was that defensively, it really did start up top with Ironside and Mullin. They worked really hard. They were really tireless. They chased people down. And they didn't really give Birmingham sort of time to maybe play out from the back like they would normally do. And I think that was quite a significant impact as to why we had so much sort of joy in the first sort of 60 minutes or so. Yeah, I was impressed with him. I think he's a really good addition to the squad. He obviously offers something different compared to Nibbs, Dallas and Mullin. He's got that height. He's got the physicality. And yeah, I think he's come to us maybe with a point to prove. And I think that's the same with Mullin as well. Mullin obviously didn't hold down a first team place with Tranmere last season, and he strikes me as someone who's desperately keen to sort of right that wrong and prove that he is a starter. And, you know, Ironside played a lot of games last season, but, you know, the team wasn't particularly great and their league finish wasn't particularly great. So I imagine he's desperate to sort of try and prove himself in a slightly better League Two team compared to where he was before. Yeah, I think it's a really good piece of business, both those signings over the summer.
It seems to me this is the first season in a few now where we've come in where we seem pretty happy with our forward lineup. I know we're light in, you know, certainly light in defence and possibly midfield as well. But, you know, we've got four strikers on the books. But, you know, I think they've all got a role to play. They've all got goals in them. You know, Ironside had a pretty good record with Kidderminster. You know, I think it was something like 1-2. He got goals at Macclesfield last year, you know, who were a basket case, you know, and probably not paying him. So, you know, he's definitely an option off the bench if he's not a starter. You know, Nibbs has a lot of potential. He impressed last year. I think he would have scored more goals as the season went on. Mullin, we know, has got goals in him, and like Jordan says, got a point to prove. And Dallas can score as well. So, you know, we're not relying on Jabbo anymore. We're not relying on Barry Corr anymore. You know, we've got a young front four, basically, with some good options in there. It's it's nice to see.
It feels like it's something we've lacked since Uche was at the club, but having someone that can hold the ball up top, and Ironside can offer that. And I see Mullin do it a little bit as well. But yeah, I agree with Owen. I think this is the first time in a long time we've gone into a season quietly happy with our striking options. We've got more than three, which is a great start. They all have different sort of styles of play and different abilities. So yeah, it's nice to go into the season feeling confident with our front four. I think if we're all honest, we would say there's room for a fifth. There's a Kwesi shaped hole in our attacking options, but you know, we can't get everything.
Do you think he started Ironside on Saturday because of the game, how thick and fast the games are coming? Because Cambridge on Saturday, season opener, and theoretically they're going to have four games in 14 days. So do you think there's going to be a bit of rotation in the first half of the season?
Yeah, well, there's going to need to be. It's as simple as that. And I think, you know, even though I've said that I don't think that's the two that I would go with, if it was my choice, I think it's encouraging that it's a combination that worked. I feel like at times in sort of previous seasons we've been stuck where it's been like we need one striker to play, otherwise the other combinations aren't quite right. And it feels like this season we might have a bit more of a thing. All right, Mullins and Akadis play 12 games in a row, whatever, you know, needs a rest. Okay, we can play these two together and it's still sort of reasonably coherent. actually, perhaps a bit unlike you guys, I was reasonably quietly confident about our striker options last season. That didn't go that well. I think I was saying kind of similar things, that I feel like they're different sort of types of players, different sort of profiles of striker that might work quite well together. So again, I don't want to get too carried away on the evidence of, well, two games now it is, but yeah, I mean, it's something that Bonner's going to have to manage, and you know, he's obviously started it from game one, if obviously that's the case. But I think primarily the reason he started those two was because the sort of tests that Birmingham were, rather than, you know, looking ahead too far, for example.
Yeah, interesting stuff. So yeah, a good result, and Newport up next. Certainly be interesting to see if Cambridge and I can get a little run going. And then the third round has already been drawn as well, right?
Yeah, we'll play the winner of Oxford versus Watford, I believe. I can't remember if that's at home or away. Not that fans are allowed in ground, so it doesn't that doesn't matter too much.
Well, talking about that, we Cambridge United, a test ground of the highest order. It's great that Cambridge were given that privilege, and there's logistical reasons why they were chosen, but this has been an exciting few weeks, and then basically the government's just pulled their pants down and pissed all over it. But looking at Fulham in the Tim Pot Trophy, that we don't particularly like to mention, but as a wider thing, having fans back in the ground, Jordan, firstly, you went to the game as our correspondent, and I just want to echo, you don't endorse this cut, but thank you for making that sacrifice. How did you find it?
Yeah, like you say, I think it's worth pointing out that the whole of Under the Abbey Stand don't really agree with that trophy and what it stands for, and stand with the sort of B team boycott. And I guess you might say it's slightly hypocritical that one of us went last night to the game. But we had a chat over the weekend, and we as a group decided that it would be worthwhile having someone go to the ground that could then come and talked about it on the pod, maybe put some others at ease and give some people some information ahead of what's supposed to be the next trial game on Saturday against Carlisle, which is meant to have a bigger crowd. At the time of recording, we don't know if that's going to happen or not. And then, fans are meant to be coming in October. But because Tom was in London and Owen's busy writing for the website and Jack isn't actually a fan of Cambridge United, I ended up going on behalf of UTAS. I'll talk about my Tuesday night back at the Abbey. First time for 6 months. For those that don't know, I stand in the North Habin.
You're an old man.
beautiful stand. Full of language, a little bit like that, Jack. But just coming over Coldham's Common from Mill Road and seeing those floodlights on was such a great feeling. It was so nice to be back. So my first impression when I was back at the ground was that where I normally park my bike was actually fenced off. And I guess that is a sort of a statement for how they're laying out the ground now. They're making more use of sort of a one-way system, so in one way, out the other. I guess the main headline was I found the whole experience very coherent, very organized, and I felt pretty safe. You go into the turnstiles, you have to read a sort of a declaration before you go in. They do a temperature check before you go through the turnstiles. You're sort of called to do the temperature check and then called to the turnstile one by one. So you're sort of, there's not a big queue forming and you're all separated out. You go through, sort of contactless, you get your ticket scanned. Once you're inside the ground, there's some very obvious changes. The toilets are sort of closed off and they've been replaced by portaloos. And then there's just loads of signage around the ground, especially on the floor. Sort of big red arrows that sort of guide you which way to go and which sort of side of the walkway to go on and to keep space. And I guess a key one for those that go into the terraces is perhaps maybe go a little bit earlier, especially if you have a favorite sort of spot that you want to stand in, because once you sort of come into the terrace, you are kind of sort of not ushered to a spot, but you are kind of sort of asked to go to a certain sort of part of the stand by the stewards to make sure that everyone is spread out. Then during the game, there were lots of announcements. It seemed like every time there was sort of a stoppage for either a, I don't know, an injury or drinks break or whatever, they would do some sort of announcements over the tannoy, just reminding everyone about distancing and about keeping your masks on. Obviously, that's the big one. We had to wear masks on Tuesday night. Imagine that will be the same on Saturday. And then, yeah, towards the end, they start sort of giving you information over the tannoy about how to leave the grounds. And yeah, the big sort of piece there is once the full-time whistle goes, you don't just leave. You have to wait for the stewards to sort of guide you out. They sort of release you in kind of sort of sections. In the Habin, we've got two sort of entrances, so they sort of split us between the two. The NRE, don't quote me on this, but it looked like it was completely one way. So you come in from the right side, you leave through the left side. If you're going to be in a seated stand, I would say patience. I think it will take a lot longer for you guys to get out. I think the south stand took about 15 minutes to get everyone out on Tuesday. And yeah, that was it. I guess final thing that I would say is don't do what I did. And that's the moment you get out of the ground, take your mask off because you're desperate to take it off, because you get out of the ground and maybe it's just a Habin problem, but you step out onto that pathway along Coldham's Common and it's packed because everyone is now on there. So yeah, there's a little bit of sort of extra due diligence just as you're fully coming off the grounds site. But yeah, overall, it was really well organized. The stewards did a brilliant job. I think the club should be proud about how they've organized it. And it was quite moving being back in there. It felt like the crowd were really behind the team. It felt like people were clapping harder and louder for, you know, the team coming out at the start. Any piece of good play seemed to be sort of clapped and sort of cheered on. And I feel like you could tell that it meant something to the players as well. So, yeah, all in all, it's a good experience. And I hope that more of us will be able to do it on Saturday at Carlisle at home. But that's to be seen.
You should work the club, Jordan. That was brilliant. But just on that, Cambridge United have tweeted while we've been recording, saying we are aware of the effect of the government's announcements this evening could potentially have on Saturday's pilot events against Carlisle. We are currently working hard to get to a solution. The football club will communicate further tomorrow. By the time this goes out, we will know what decision the football club has come to, and obviously, you know, we've banged on about coronavirus a lot during our lockdown recordings. And obviously it's bigger than any event. But Tom, if the event goes ahead and you can go, how are you feeling about going back to live football in a stadium with obviously vastly reduced capacity?
Yeah, I mean, based on what Jordan has just said, I don't see any problem at all. I'm not trying to go into opinions on government announcements too much. I've been going to work, you know, I've got a tube every day for the last 3 months. I've been working in an office with 80 other people. I don't really see any reason why I shouldn't be able to go to football. You know, pubs are open, restaurants are open. They've just been encouraging people to go and eat out pretty much every night of the week for the last sort of month or so. But, you know, it's obviously another conversation. But I think the first thing that I'd say is just to kind of commend the club, really. You know, we've not said it too many times since we've started sort of doing this pod, but I think the way that the club sort of handled itself since pretty much the start of the pandemic really has been remarkable, really, in kind of so many ways. I think, you know, the communication to fans about things like season tickets, whether it's refunds, you know, putting them on sale. I think in terms of the outreach within its community, sort of elderly members of obviously the sort of Abbey area, you know, the sort of mental health work they've been doing throughout the lockdown period. It's not a coincidence at all that we were probably the club that was selected to do this. And it sounds like it ran, you know, it's the first time fans have been back in ground in this way. Probably the first time there's ever been socially distanced football matches. And it sounds like it went perfectly, to be honest. So that's the first thing I'd say. I mean, the other thing I'd say is kind of on what Jordan mentioned at the top about the kind of coronavirus pandemic. About the EFL Trophy and our kind of opinions on that. I do think it was more important that this event went well than it was to maybe boycott that game specifically. And that's not something that I thought I'd ever say, to be honest. You know, as much as I support the boycott, you know, I didn't go last night. I watched the game on iFollow, which I wouldn't usually do for this particular tournament. But it was important that the club was supporting. It sounded like it went really well. But yeah, I mean, in terms of going back to the ground, I mean, you know, like you've mentioned, Jack, people that listen to this will know exactly whether or not we can go on Saturday. But if it goes as well as that, it's managed as well as it has been on Tuesday. Personally, I was really looking forward to it. Personally, I really kind of built myself up to get back to the Abbey on Saturday. First league game, you know, big test of the team. Be good to get there and support them, particularly on the back of two decent performances, two decent results. But, you know, it remains to be seen. But, you know, regardless of whether we can or can't go, it shouldn't take away from the, you know, sort of, you know, the work that the club has done and the fact that we were given the opportunity in the first place. So, yeah, we'll see. But, yeah, just looking forward to getting back, whether that's Saturday, whether that's, you know, a few weeks down the line.
It feels like the eyes of the country were on us last night to see how we got on, and the club responded by delivering really well. One important thing to point out, if you buy food there, be careful that the sauce dispenser is foot pump operated and it's not a hand sanitizer dispenser, which according to Twitter, someone last night got wrong. Would have loved to have seen that.
Did you make a mistake?
It wasn't. Well, I actually went to the game thinking that food wouldn't be available. So I was surprised that it was. But no, it wasn't me in this instance, I promise. But I think considering that we watched the game, just wonder if what everyone sort of thought about the performance. I say that and Tom's walked off. But he's come back. I know it's not a particularly strong barometer to sort of judge by, because we were playing a team of kids and the intensity will be a lot different on Saturday, but I really thought the performance was quite promising last night, and I think there's a few people that were definitely cementing their names being in and around the first team squad, in particular Mr. Tom Knowles, who was fantastic.
Yeah, I'd completely agree with that, to be honest. It was one of those performances where it was so comfortable that, to be honest, you could pretty much go through the whole team, everyone that played, the subs that came on, and say, oh, he played really well. You know, you could pick him out for praise. But it was just a generally very professional, very solid performance. Knowles was obviously excellent. Obviously got the goal, probably could and should have maybe had one or two more as well, as could the rest of the team, of course. But when I was watching it, I thought Adam May played really well. You know, obviously first start for the club, again a shame that he had to go off, but I thought when he played he looked really good. I thought his passing looked really good. Iredale looked pretty comfortable at centre back, obviously a position that I didn't really expect to be seeing him in at all. I thought Kyle Noyle was excellent. I thought Mullin's goal was unbelievable. I was
lovely,
so impressed with that. I mean, it was strange, actually, because I never really had him down as a really sort of clinical finisher, a really clinical goal scorer. But that was, you know, unbelievable. It was one chance, one goal. And, you know, again, maybe could have got one more as well. Obviously, debut for Lewis Simper as well, which is good to see. Came on, held his own very well. Probably not the exact scenario that he would have imagined it, but, you know, one that he'll never forget anyway. And, you know, you would hope and obviously imagine that would be the start of, hopefully, a long, successful career there. But, another really good performance. Good to keep the momentum going more than anything, I think, with those games. But another one where you don't want to take too much out of it. You don't want to get too carried away. But, you know, we did what we had to do. We did it very well. And the only real disappointment is that we didn't score maybe 5 or 6 goals.
Yeah, it was disappointing that the Digger had his second goal in 2 games ruled out. I thought that was quite a soft decision. And I felt a bit for Andy Dallas, who tried everything to score and just couldn't get it across the line, and when he did, it randomly got sort of disallowed. Did you watch, Owen?
I didn't know.
Missed out, mate.
I wish I had. It sounded scintillating.
Anyway, yeah, we pay that tournament itself very little attention, but a really good, you know, effort by everyone involved with the club and the people who went down, you know, going down for absolutely the right reasons. and brilliant to see how well it went from, you know, a logistics point of view. So it's brilliant to see that for Cambridge United. Just before we bring the first half to a close, we've got some new investors, some new rich investors.
You sound incredibly surprised by that, Jack.
Well, Adam Webb and Mark Green, the household names that they are, have both now taken on a 10% stake each in the club, so leaving Paul Barry with 80%. I mean, I don't know how excited we can get, because I'm not sure any of us know anything about it, but Owen, surely a good sign to have a couple more fingers in our pie.
Yeah, I think so. You know, these guys don't really seem to have much of a connection with the club or anything like that. Barry must have made them aware that, you know, we have no assets for them to strip. You know, I hopefully they don't have too much of an ulterior motive for wanting to get involved. I mean, no one gets involved with, you know, a totally, let's face it, skint League Two football team that doesn't own its ground, you know, to get rich. So, you know, hopefully they're, I say hopefully because I have issues about Barry's ownership, but, you know, for the good of the club, let's hope they're using it essentially as the same kind of vehicle that Barry's using it to maybe write down a bit of his tax in America. It strikes me as very much a safety investment, much like Barry's own investment. You know, the club have essentially said that in their statement, you know, this isn't going to be the, you know, the kind of Man City-esque investment that, you know, sees tons and tons of players come in or, you know, redevelopment of the ground or anything like that. But, you know, if it gets us through this season and the next few seasons and, you know, maybe frees up a few pennies somewhere for us to bring in, you know, the kind of caliber of player we need to kind of get out of this league, then, yeah, you know, I guess we can only look at it as a good thing.
I think the key quote from the whole release was from Paul Barry himself saying the funding is timely, not transformative. So I think that just goes to show that it's not the Arab oil money that we would love to see pumped into our club that we can buy our way to Premier League glory. But yeah, it's definitely a good sign that we've got some extra sort of resources there, because it's well documented that Paul Barry's money comes from the travel industry, an industry which, like many, has been severely hit by this pandemic. But what I thought was interesting was a couple of things. And firstly, they approached Paul Barry about getting involved with the club rather than him going and looking for sort of their investment. He also said something along the lines of new investors in Cambridge United should share our visions and values and have ambition for the future alongside realism about current changes. Current challenges. So it does seem like they know what they're getting involved in. It's not a particularly glamorous situation to get involved in, like Owen was alluding to. League Two, don't own your ground. There's not a lot there, really, is there? But they both seem really optimistic in their sort of press releases. And I was surprised by the timing, relieved by the timing, because it was good to know that there was some support for Paul Barry in this point. But I was a bit surprised that it came in. Well, a bit surprised that it came in at this time, because I thought people would be tightening their belts. I'm not surprised in general that he has accepted other people coming in. I feel like his move to buy 100% of the shares, whenever it was last year, was kind of a longer tactic for him to maybe move out people that he didn't want involved with the club or invested in the club, and to allow him to have a greater say over who gets involved, and perhaps mirror more of the setup that he has with the Seattle Sounders, which he is invested in, which I believe there's about 6 or 7 key investors in that club, and he is one of those. So it looks like a sort of a mini extent he is mirroring that kind of setup here at Cambridge. So yeah, obviously we're going to welcome money. It's a pretty bleak time. So yeah, some good news in what has been a pretty good news week until last night.
Yeah, I was just going to pretty much echo exactly what the other guy said, really. Maybe just add that I think, you know, it's kind of our right as fans to be a bit sceptical of investment. You know, we've seen it go tits up enough at our own club, you know, let alone the countless other examples of kind of, you know, rogue owners coming in and clubs obviously finding themselves up the creek without a paddle, so to speak. that, in fact, probably a bit further than that's actually what we are, duty is fans to be a bit sceptical and to kind of challenge it and, well, not challenge it necessarily, but, you know, ask the right questions and find out who these guys are. It seems like Owen said, their motivation is probably maybe in some level of taxation, you know, recouping a bit of that. I'm not a massive expert on American tax legislation, but I understand that there's some sort of incentive in it. And to be honest with you, if there's American investors that want to invest overseas, I'm more than happy for it to come into Cambridge United if it means they're saving a bit of their tax. But yeah, well, you know, investing in the club at a time like this is brilliant. And I think the point that Jordan made about that they approached Paul Barry maybe is indicative that maybe he's getting approached a bit more than what we would know about. I seem to remember Dave Doggett suggesting at times that when he was obviously chairman of the club, you know, he had countless people coming to him. You know, there's always going to be interest in buying a football club. You know, we've seen enough people invest in them over the years that we know that there's people there who will do it. But it's all about ensuring that the reasons are at least not malicious, you know, to the sort of short or long term future of the club. But you know, it remains to be seen that they've not bought a controlling stake in the club. I think it's 10% each. It's not overwhelming. It probably, you know, helps to you know, get the club through, or help us kind of navigate through the pandemic. And that's, you know, what more can be asked, really.
Yeah, really good stuff. Certainly interesting to see how this affects the club and if it's a beneficial thing. But yeah, good news week, like Jordan said. And certainly, well, we won't have trepidation to hear about tomorrow and the future of fans at games this season. But the club themselves have done pretty well out of throughout, you know, COVID and lockdown. So hats off to them. Coming up in the second half, we're going to look to a squad review and then look ahead to the games in September. Right, moving swiftly on into the second part of this podcast, we're going to look at Cambridge United's squad for this season. Obviously, we've talked a little bit about a couple of the new signings that came in over the summer and featured in the games previously this week, but certainly interesting to see how they fare. So, starting at the back, right at the back, there's three goalkeepers in the Cambridge United squad, but we understand that one who came straight in has gone straight back out on loan. Owen, any thoughts on Mackenzie Lyle coming in?
I can't say I know too much about him. He's tall. He's got international experience. He's played for Liverpool. I think he's come through Liverpool's youth setup. So, you know, he must have something about him. Someone somewhere has seen something about him. Bit disappointed he seems to have been punted straight out to St Neots. I mean, I know we've got a link up with them, but I was kind of hoping that they'd loan him out to somewhere at a higher level. I mean, whether he's just gone there as an emergency for the last game and, you know, he'll come back and we'll find a kind of better home for him soon, because I think their next game is in the FA Cup, so we don't really want him getting cup tied, because yeah, like you said, Jack, Mitov and Burton both have clangers in them. We both know it. They both like to concede goals by the bucket laid. So yeah, there's you know, a new keeper, maybe it's not the best way of spending our money, but you know, it's always good to have three keepers on the books, I suppose, isn't it? You know, we're light anyway, an injury to Mitov or Burton, and you know, perhaps a sending off or a loss in form or loss in confidence, you know, with the defenders or whatever, means it's good to have someone else in there on the books.
Yeah, I'd probably say this is the most confusing area of the squad for me. Obviously, you know, look, I'm never going to be against us bringing in a player if we think he's either good enough or has the potential to be good enough at some point. That seems to be what we've done with Mackenzie Lyle. I'm not sure if he has joined St Neots on loan. I'd be astounded if he had. I mean, I know he played at the weekend, but I think it was just covering, especially given we've already got, I think it's Louis Chadwick there. For us to send two keepers to one club would seem very, very odd, given that means you're certainly not getting development out of one of them, which would be a pretty strange decision. I suspect he'll probably go a bit higher up. but obviously the more immediate conversation will be around the two that we've got in the first team. Obviously, Mitov and Burton, you know, we've spoken on a number of occasions, had a number of questions over the past probably, you know, year or so about these two. Who would you have? Who would be your number one? And the conclusion we've always come to is that we don't really have a kind of number one choice. They've both got faults. They've both got positives to their game. But ultimately, I think we've got two second choice goalkeepers at this level. You know, Mitov's probably better at shortstopping, I think. I probably think it's fair to say that Burton's probably a bit better at the distribution side of the game. I don't know which one Bonner prefers. I don't know if he has a preference any more than I do, to be honest. But yeah, you know, they're okay League Two goalkeepers. They're not a lot more than that. But, you know, we are where we are with them. I don't suspect that there's going to be too much more movement there. The other thing to mention is that as well, we've got Mark Bunn as the goalkeeper coach, who's, you know, still significantly younger than David Ford was when he was playing for us, and could probably still do a job if needed at this level. So if the option was there to maybe move the two we've got on, bring in a quality first choice keeper and have Bunn as maybe the backup, or Mackenzie Lyle as a backup, then that would be my ideal choice. But, you know, we are where we are with it. I accept there's going to have to be some flexibility in the squad in terms of what we bring in, the business that we do. And if that's it, then it is what it is. But, yeah, you know, perhaps 6 months down the line, we'll bring Mackenzie Lyle back in. It'll be like a sort of Will Norris effect when he came back in, but we'll see.
I'll be honest with you, Jack. I feel like I used all my positivity about the squad up in part one when we talked about our front four. Mm-hmm. There's obviously something about the lad in the sense that attracted Liverpool to signing him. I don't think he went through the youth team. I think they picked him up at a certain age and then he's been there a couple of years. So, yeah, file under one for the future. But I'm firmly with Tom on this one. We have two lads who are basically level pegging as number ones, and neither I feel wholly confident in as having them as my number one. I think Burton's more of a talker, and maybe that edges him as Bonner's preference. He played a lot at the end of last season. But yeah, I personally think Mitov's probably the more talented of the two. But it would have been bold to see both of them released this summer and a new one signed. And I guess they went against that because they're under contract and they felt that there was a lot of strengthening that was needed in other areas. And and thankfully, you know, to be fair to the recruitment team, they have strengthened in all the areas that I feel that we needed to bring in. Minus the goalkeeper. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see who starts against Carlisle on Saturday. I wonder if maybe being that better communicator and having a good game on Tuesday night, which Burton did, to be fair, made some good saves, maybe that will put him as number one. And I think that communication, commanding your area, talking to your back two, is quite key, especially because centre-back is a really... is another area that we're lacking, really. We've got two young lads there in Harry Darling and Robbie Cundy who are going to be looking for sort of support and advice from others around them. And the vast majority of that for a centre-back will be coming from your goalkeeper. So, yeah, maybe that will see Burton start.
Yeah, interesting to see how that goes. I mean, all three goalkeepers combined have less than 100 club appearances under their belts, so inexperience is certainly something that might affect the Cambridge United goalkeepers. But yeah, you say that they've got to talk to the defence. Well, let us talk about the defence. So yeah, Cambridge United have acquired a couple of new defenders and kept two clean sheets in two competitive games so far this season. So I mean, very, very early doors in one tin pot competition against the poor looking Championship side, but still good positives to start the season with. Owen, how are you feeling looking at the defenders we've got on the books? Are we still light centre back wise? And generally, what are you thinking about the defence?
Yeah, it's light, isn't it? I mean, three recognised centre backs, two of them very young, one of them with as yet, no league experience. I mean, a League Cup game under his belt in Robbie Cundy. But one appearance, one goal, one clean sheet. Keep that up, can't go wrong. I don't know if he's going to be first choice. I think we spoke in the first half about Darling having an injury. So, but personally, I'd like to see Darling in as my first choice centre-back. Taylor partnering him. I mean, Greg's been a great servant for the club. You know, let's not get that wrong. He's, been part of a team that got us up, been part of a team that has performed very well and, been a really good servant for United. So, but he's been here 10 years now, I think, or getting on for 10 years. Is he's not as young as he once was. He's not as quick as he once was. You know, mistakes are creeping into his game. So, I guess what I'm trying to say is I don't think you're going to get promoted with Greg Taylor in the centre of your defence. And that pains me to say it because, I love him for everything he's done for the club. But we do need someone else there for sure. Left back, right back, I think we're okay. Idel played centre back against Fulham there. We've got Dunkley can play left back. It's not his best position, but he can play there. Taylor can play there. Right back, we've got Noyle, that's his position. He was one of the better performers before he came to us in the league. We've also got Davis, who started off as a right back and has now been pushed forward, but I guess can drop back if he needs to. So there's positives and negatives for me in the defence, but yeah, I'd definitely like to see another body come in for cover.
Perhaps I was a little negative last time when I was talking about goalkeepers and centre back. So I'll try and start with some positivity. I think the recruitment team have done a good job in bringing in players across the squad that have versatility. I think we've got two candidates in the Digger and Iredale who aren't naturally centre backs, but could double up as centre backs if we need them. And I have a feeling that we will see that happen this season. We've seen it over the last, the first two games that we've had of the season. We've had people go off injured. Nothing crucial, like nothing significant at this point. But little niggles, little knocks, take them off just to be sure. So I think we've got a squad where we've got some versatility to sort of put some players into sort of defensive positions if we need to, which is quite smart. But I'll come out and say it. I really feel that one of the key signings, possibly the key signing of the summer for us, was someone that fits a profile as a centre-back who is very commanding, a lot of league experience, but isn't as old, isn't as old as perhaps Greg Taylor, maybe a little bit younger. And that was a really key profile that we needed in the squad, and we haven't picked it up. And I'm disappointed by that. Cundy, so far has looked promising. So, perhaps I'll be eating my words come the end of the season and he'll do a stellar job for us. There's obviously some talent there because Bristol City picked him up from non-league. So they've obviously seen something in him. But I can't get that thought out of my head that we should have pick someone up with a bit more experience to be playing centre back. I guess the other positive in the defence is it could be worse. We could be Meldrith and we could have just signed Jack Swindlehurst as centre back. So there's a positive to end on.
That is so horrible because you put in the chat of our group saying who I played for, and I thought you're going to be like, or maybe we could tackle Meldrith. I thought you're going to be really complimentary.
Well, that was never going to happen, was it? That was never going to happen. And just a reminder, you called me the C word in part one, so
I did
pipe down, and let's hear Tom's opinion on the centre backs.
Yeah, I would agree with everything that was said before Jack sort of lobbing expletives around. I would pretty much, again, I don't want to kind of sit on the fence too much about the pod, but I pretty much agree with what you two guys have said again. I think the business we've done has been good in pretty much all the signings we've made. I think in terms of the fullbacks, we've been left with decent options left and right. I think Noyles are, you know, probably in the conversation for the best right back in the league. He was, you know, one of my better players last season. He's probably the best right back in the league the year that we signed him from Swindon. Left back, now Idel, you know, he's not massively experienced. It's not a sign that fills me with excitement, but he's a left back. And I think that what we get from him is, well, it's been suggested that it's the absolute sort of modern fullback in terms of pretty strong going forward and potentially a little bit questionable at times at the back. And, you know, what more do you expect from a League Two fullback than that? Ultimately, they're either usually pretty solid, I think Noyle is, and maybe leave a bit to be decided going forward, or vice versa. Centre back is where I have issues. Like we alluded to a lot during the first part, we don't want to get too carried away by two decent performances. And I think centre back is one that we really need to be careful that we don't go, you know, it's two clean sheets in glorified friendlies. It's one good performance from Robbie Cundy. I mean, a very good performance in a glorified friendly, and therefore we don't need anybody else there. I look at the centre back options we've got. Cundy has good potential this season. Darling has good potential this season. Greg is going to be an important squad member for us, I think. But I agree with Owen in 2020. Is he the person who's going to be sort of your rock in a promotion charge? I don't think so. And in my opinion, that's the profile of player that we should have been going for in terms of a really sort of, you know, a bit of a brute almost at the back would have been quite nice. But, you know, in the same way that we said a lot during the Coast pod that we recorded last week, an important caveat to make is that we are recording this still with about a month left of the transfer window. There's still time to move. You know, we've just talked about some new investment in the club. Maybe that opens up one or two doors that weren't there before. I think Bon has mentioned in interviews that he's done, there is flexibility to bring people in. I would hope this is on the agenda, and I would hope that they don't just go, well, we've done okay so far, so let's just kind of stick with it and see what happens. Because this year, more than ever, you can't be taking risks over, you know, Greg staying fit all season, staying on form all season, Harry Darling, you know, making the step as we expect that he probably will, and Cundy playing 45, 50 games this season at the same level that he did against Birmingham, because the likelihood is you might get one or two of those, but you're not going to get all three. And you kind of need a bit more depth than that, than maybe two potentially good centre backs and one who's a very good squad player at this level. So that'd be my assessment of the defence. I think left and right are pretty good, but down the spine of the team, it's maybe where across the course of a season there's a bit to be desired. But still time. I hope it's on the club's agenda. And hopefully sort of, you know, the next time we're sat here recording, we're talking about a really solid pair of centre backs and good depth in case something should go wrong.
Yeah, good stuff. Certainly be interesting to see if Cambridge can pick up someone else to shore up that defence a bit more. Not too many high-profile signings, but a couple of good ones from Cambridge United during this transfer window so far. Into the midfield, and we have a man who's already made himself a hero amongst Cambridge fans and fans, and is already an icon, the Digger, Paul Digby. We've got him there. But Tom and Owen and Jordan now going to run us through their thoughts on the midfield. Jordan, you go first. I know you're a big fan of the Digger.
Absolutely. And Owen is going to shoot me evils because I'm going to steal a term from him from our chat earlier, but he's got a touch of the oneness about him. He sort of does that defensive work. He does the tackling. He's hard to beat. He likes to get forward and seems to sort of nick a headed goal so far. So there's lots of attributes there, which, yeah, I think people love to see in that sort of defensive midfield sort of central sort of midfield role. possibly, oh, I don't know, it's too early to start comparing to Tom Champion, isn't it? And Julian's going to listen to this in Greece on his holiday and tell me off. So I won't go and compare it to Champion so far. But yeah, I think Digby has got all the attributes to be one of our better players this season. And then it's about who you play in the middle with him. Obviously, we started O'Neill against Birmingham. You know, O'Neill has his injury challenges every season. We know that. So, you know, he's not going to play all season. So there is a risk. We need others in there to have options. Unfortunately, we signed Adam May a few days ago. So we do have, something different in there to sort of mix it up. I thought O'Neill and the Digger away at Birmingham were very robust, were very sort of, very kind of brutal and kept people out, and that was needed. But, you know, the pair of them together aren't very creative. So a lot on the shoulders of young Adam May, who's come in and looked all right in his sort of start against Fulham last night. But yeah, I think this, this is maybe another area that they might look to strengthen in. Like Tom says, we still got a month of the transfer window left. You know, do we look to find another sort of central creative midfielder who can maybe double up as an attacker or a winger? I think Digger, big fan.
You've missed our highest profile signing, Jordan.
Well, I was gonna park Wes until, you know, till the end. I thought, you know, let's get all the other minions out of the way, and then we'll talk pure Wesy.
Pure Wesy, I like it. Yeah, I'm going to echo what you say, Ben, if I may. Adam May, you said he looked good. He certainly seems like the kind of player we need. The Digger, next pull on us. Let's hope so. And you know, obviously out of the wings is probably where we've got a decent amount of options as well. You know, in Knowles, he seems to be making a real case to break through this season. He's probably going to find it a little bit difficult because, you know, he's got Dunk, he's got Hannan, he's got Leon Davis, and also the player we'll talk about in a bit, kind of all, you know, ahead of him in contention. But, you know, he's when he is getting his first team chance, you know, and he didn't last season, but the season before, you know, he is scoring goals from free kicks. So, you know, it's if maybe he's not going to be a starter, I doubt he is. You know, maybe he's an option you can have and bring on, bring on towards the end of a game and maybe try and create something and get some crosses in. We've got good crosses at the club. I think that's something we're not gonna struggle with this year is kind of getting balls into the box. Whether or not there's anyone to get on the end of them remains to be seen. But Cundy seems to be putting his head forward to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I would say similar things about the midfield as well. Certainly that I'm a lot happier than I was this time last week with it, for similar reasons that we talked about. The centre backs, I felt we were maybe a central midfield player light, someone of the, you know, sort of description of Adam May light as well. And so when we signed him, I was pretty happy with that. And obviously that was announced. I think we're all good in the middle, in the sort of midfield. I don't think we would need necessarily to go out and get anybody else. I think if we were, I would disagree slightly maybe with Owen. I think we could maybe do a bit more quality on the wing, maybe a bit more proven quality on the wing. But I'm not going to kick up too much of a fuss if we didn't do any business there. I like the business we've done again in midfield. I think May looks a good signing. Digby, based on what we've seen, is looked very good. Sorry, the Digger.
Thank you.
Yeah, sorry about that. A bit like we mentioned, though, it'll be good not to be too heavily reliant on him because it's a big ask for a centre mid to play every game of the season. And it looks like he's going to be the sort of stalwart of the team. So it'd be good if we could have maybe someone covering for him when he's not needed. We've obviously got Lewis Simper in there as well, who obviously made his debut against Fulham in the trophy. You know, looks like he's going to stay with the club sort of throughout the season as well. I think Bonn has been very much counting him among the sort of midfield options. So another one there. And I think out wide there, talks about Knowles, hopefully he'll get a bit more of a chance. But I think it's one of those where you don't want to be relying too much on someone making the step up. It'd be nice if he did, nice if he got more of a chance, be nice if he took the chance. But what we don't want to do is leave ourselves with too many ifs or buts in the squad. So, Jordan, you've already mentioned Liam O'Neill's injury record. I'll go a bit further than that and say about his disciplinary record as well. We know he's going to get sent off one or two times this season. It's happened in all the years he's been here so far. There's no reason to think that's not going to happen again. Digby might drop out of form. So we're expecting him to stay fit, to stay at the top of his game all season. We're asking, for example, Hannon to stay fit all season. That usually doesn't happen. Dunk's the same. I think we're asking Leon Davies to again stay on form all season. He's still a young player, though he's been a big part of the team over the last year or so. And then, we'll come on to Wes, but, he's 38. We can't be relying on him to be delivering quality every week. So already across the midfield, there are some question marks, but, this is one of those seasons where and it's one of those situations with the pandemic that there's going to have to be a bit of flexibility. And it's good to see that I think across the midfield, there is a bit of versatility there. The reason I don't think we need another central player is that if needed, Wes can obviously play there. That gives us good options. So,
I think what we know now about Bonner is he prefers 4-4-2. So I just think, for that to work, you need a minimum of four central midfielders. Like Tom says, we've got the four, but the fourth one is obviously Lewis Simper, who is a youth product. I just wonder if the digger might be needed elsewhere on the pitch throughout the season, maybe dropping back and helping out in defence. Injury records and suspension records. So it'll be interesting. There's a lot. There's potentially a lot on the shoulders of a lot of the younger players in the squad to be up for it and to be able to be called upon should they have their chance. And I think this season, more than any, they're going to have their chance. Turning to the wings, I don't know. Our best player is obviously on our right wing, but I feel like we're lopsided in the sense that we've got more options on the left. Hannon was brilliant against Birmingham. Great delivery for the goal. Did a lot of running. Tom Knowles last night against Fulham definitely put himself into contention as a first team player. I would be surprised if we're not seeing him come off the bench last 20, 30 in games this season, because he'll be a real threat with his sort of pace and his willingness to sort of run at people and have a shot. And then like Owen said, we've got Mr. Cambridge United in Harrison Dunk, 10th year with us. He can play left back, but we would rather see him play on the left wing. So I feel we've got more options there. And over on the right side, obviously we've got Wesley, who's the best player at the club, I reckon. And then we've got young Leon Davis, who is being converted from a fullback into a wide midfielder. I wouldn't call him an out and out winger. He's not your hug the byline, run past people, knock it past and run past people like Dave Amu type winger. So, I wonder if there might be scope for another right-sided midfielder to come in on loan, preferably not playing for his parent club in Ipswich at the moment, maybe. Who can tell? I think we've got a fairly strong midfield, but I don't know if it will be enough to see us challenge for sort of top 10.
No, interesting to see if El Mazzuni does come in. And just a word from both Owen and Tom. Owen, first, just how big is the signing of Wes Houlihan?
It's huge. I mean, despite the guy's age, he's, he's got massive, massive pedigree. International appearances for Republic of Ireland, most recently at the Euros in 2016. International goal scoring ability. With Mackenzie Lyle, we'll have two international goal scorers in the squad now. I don't think too many League Two sides can claim that. Premier League pedigree with Norwich. We're still playing in the Championship quite recently as well. I'm not going to kid myself. He is 38. He's not going to be a 90 minute player. Saturday, Tuesday, but hopefully he's still got the ability to turn a game, when he's needed. will he be a starter and then drop off towards the end, or will he be more of an impact sub? I'm not quite sure how he's going to be used. I mean, he didn't feature against Fulham, but started against Birmingham. So, yeah, I'm excited to see him finally in a Cambridge United shirt. I was a little bit disappointed last year when he went off to Australia for his little swan song out there. But yeah, no, I'm really excited to see him at Cambridge, and he seems to be settled in the area. Hopefully not on too big a wage. You know, I suspect he's kind of made his money and is pretty comfortable here now. So it's a good signing.
Yeah, it was. I guess it was a bit like a gap year for him in Australia. Can imagine him like sat at the back of the team coach telling Paul Digby about gap year anecdotes or something. Hey. Sorry, the digger.
Thank you.
The digger. Sorry, that's awful. I just hope it's one that we've not sort of rushed to. If that sort of makes sense. It's been a strange situation with Wes. Obviously, it was a bit disappointing, probably more from the club side, to be honest, that we didn't sign him, in that we centred last pre-season around the player that didn't play for us. But it seems like it was just one of those situations where it sort of popped up and we've gone for it without a second thought, really. I think the biggest challenge is going to be managing him, managing his fitness, managing his minutes well. You know, Bonner will have to play a part in that, but you'd hope at this age, with the experience he's got, he's very good at hopefully managing himself, sort of managing how he plays. You know, you kind of hear this of players all the time. You know, when they start to get towards the latter stage of their career, they say that, you know, I kind of know how to manage my own fitness now, and you only see players playing until sort of later now than what you might do before. It seems like, although he didn't play that many games sort of across the last year or so, he got quite a bad impact injury when he first got to Australia, and then was just getting fit, and then obviously the pandemic hit. So, he's probably still reasonably fit. It doesn't seem like there's any sort of recurring issues there. And, in terms of quality, there's probably not going to be too many better players at this level. I know there's a few sort of high profile signings like Salford have made, for example. You know, we've seen Yaya Toure training with Leighton Orient. Be interested to see what their group chat's like at the moment with the news about old Yaya. But there's certainly not going to be too many better quality players at this level. And it's really important that it's the case that, in a way, the quality that he can provide is a bonus to us. And it's not something that we're relying on, because we've spoken a lot in the past about, you know, maybe relying on like a Barry Corr when you know for a fact that you're not going to get a full season out of him. But it's okay to have him as a squad member coming off the bench, that sort of thing. And that's how it's got to be with Wes. But it's a high profile signing. It's one that might rub off on some of the younger members of the squad as well. Might be able to teach one or two of them a few things. It'll be interesting to see how it goes. But really, really good to see him, and really good to see him play against Birmingham on Saturday. So hopefully stays fit, hopefully contributes a lot, and hopefully we get to see the best of him.
The whole Wes situation for me makes me think about, you know, when you fancy someone and they kind of chat to you for a bit and then they ditch you for someone better, and then after a little while they'll text you back. And I guess it all depends on what kind of person you are, but I don't have a backbone, so I welcome them back because they're fit. So I'm excited that Wes is here and in the building. I think it's obvious to everyone what the limitations are with Wes, his age. He's not played a lot of games over the last couple of seasons, and this season is going to be very challenging on all the players because there's a lot of midweek games. So we won't see him Saturday to Tuesday, but I'm confident that when we do see him, he will have a really positive impact on the team. My biggest fear and my biggest worry is about not playing to his strengths, and I would rather see him playing more centrally behind a couple of strikers rather than out on the wing. I know he's played as a winger previously in his career, so he can do a job there. But, you know, my preference would be to have him pulling the strings in that sort of number 10 role, not having to do sort of tracking back and defending, and just really influencing what is quite an exciting front four. But, you know, Bonner prefers these banks of four in his formation. So I guess Wes on the wing is better than no Wes at all. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see how close Leon Davis runs him for a starting place, because I thought Leon did particularly well last season, especially the second half, as our sort of first choice right-sided midfielder. But yeah, it's an incredible signing getting Houlihan here. I wasn't expecting it after everything that went on last year, and it's possibly the biggest and most talked about signing for League Two this summer because of his, you know, his experience and his reputation. So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what he can bring to the club.
Yeah, I would just as kind of a final point for me on him. I mean, it might be a little bit assumptive, but the impression I get from footballers at, you know, sort of latter stage of their career is that if they really know that they can't do what they want to do on a football pitch, they generally speaking retire. You know, you hear from like defenders and stuff that, oh, I knew because I was starting to pull out of tackles and stuff like that. So generally speaking, I think if they back themselves, they'll probably still have it, sort of thing. You know, it obviously remains to be seen, but it's just exciting, isn't it, to have someone that good, because we've signed some shite over the years and he's really quite a good footballer.
Yeah, certainly nice to see a household name like that in the Cambridge ranks, and he looked good seeing him on Saturday. So he's definitely still got it, and just that distribution could be a game changer for Cambridge this year with people like Cundy in the middle. So just before we wrap it up, the last bit of the squad, the firepower, the forwards in the squad. Recruited a new forward. A couple of new forwards, in fact, in the transfer window, Owen, and we've got a bit of firepower going into this season.
Yeah. Touched on it in the first half. I think I made a point, but I'm happy we've got four strikers. It's been a long time since we've had four strikers. Certainly, four strikers in their 20s. I think all of them are going to have a part to play this season, especially with the games coming thick and fast. So, you know, if we get goals out of them, fantastic. If not, send them off to St. Neots and let Barry Corr teach them.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Tom, any words on the strikers?
Yeah, obviously, we talked about them a lot in the first part. I don't really have too much more to say. I'm really happy with signing Paul Mullen. I just think it's an excellent sign at this level. And I can bang on about it all day, but I just think it's a really good player. Nibs has got the really fortunate knack of knowing how to get in the right place at the right time. And we've had plenty of strikers that don't know how to do that, so that's a positive in itself. I think, you know, Ironside, he scored goals before, scored goals again, and hopefully we can get that out of him. Dallas, I think there's maybe a bit more to come from. I think it maybe needs to just show a little bit more to get a sort of consistent place in the team. I don't think we can or should talk about our forward options without mentioning there's a gaping hole in there, a gaping 21 shirt that's been left free. We'd all love to see him back. We'd all love to see Kwezi come back, you know, but it's good that we're in a position where we're not reliant on it. And I'd be reasonably confident going into the season as is, but hopefully our new Yankee Doodle owners can throw some American dollars at Mr. Apayo and he can come home. Pretty happy.
And good firepower, Jordan. It could be an encouraging season if a couple of them get on form.
Yeah, absolutely. We talked about forward. I talked about the forwards quite a bit in the first part, so people are probably bored of my voice, but I'll give you another couple of minutes anyway. Why not? You've already downloaded this pod. I think the biggest thing for me is it's nice to have different options there. You've got a striker that likes to play off the shoulder, you've got a taller target man, you've got then sort of two other players that are sort of somewhere in between and like to cause nuisance of themselves, which is encouraging. I thought Nibs last night against Fulham actually looked a little bit stronger, like I want to say bigger, but not in like a kind of jabbo way. He looks like he might be a bit stronger, so I think I'll close my remarks on the forwards by saying I'm really excited to see if Harvey Nibs can kick on this season, because I think he's got all the attributes there, and he obviously ended last season pretty well. So yeah,
firepower in the squad. If a couple of them can get going, it could be quite promising for Cambridge. Going to put you on the spot. Who do you think is going to be Cambridge United's top scorer this season, and how many goals are they going to get? Tom Walker.
Already talked about him. Paul Mullen. I think he'll be top goal scorer, and I'm going to go bullish. I'm going to say 19.
Wow.
That's you've changed your tone since last week. Owen, who do you think is going to be top scorer and how many?
I'm going to go with Nibs. I like Nibs. I think he's got goals in him. If he has kind of strengthened up a little bit, as Jordan says, then you know that's something in his game that he perhaps needs to work on. So yeah, Harvey Nibs. I'm not as confident as you, Tom. Sorry, mate. 14 goals.
Jordan. Can see you frantically googling.
Yeah, I'm just crunching the numbers, and I'm feeling confident with this. To finally end David Crown's goal scoring record for goals in a season, Andy Dallas 31.
That's incredible. And just for my two penny, I think I'm going to go with in the middle of all of yours and go Kwezi Appiah, 25 goals. I think he'll be top scorer.
We all know the Digger's going to be top goal scorer.
Yeah, with 50 goals. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting
shoveling
season.
Shoveling them in the back of the net.
Oh, yeah. I like that.
Sorry. I'll mute myself again. Sorry.
Yeah. Thanks, Tom. But yeah, great stuff. So Cambridge United, we've gone through the squad. Just quickly, lads, we just want to hear from you how we think this season's going to go for Cambridge. You know, where in the league is realistic to think this season they'll finish and how it's all going to go?
My heart says the playoffs. It really does. You know, if we score goals, if we score loads of goals. But my head, you know, realistically, we're going to be like 15th or something like that. I don't think we've got the depth in the squad to be, you know, great week after week. I think we'll put in some really good performances this season. I think we'll see some really good games. I think we'll maybe even dish out a couple of hide-ins to people, but I think we'll be on the receiving end of a few as well. There'll be games it just doesn't gel for us, and yeah, realistically 15th.
Yeah.
Say no more. Yeah, sorry, I mean, there's a bit of a gap there. I'm just gonna edit that. Sorry, I fucked that up because I was panicking.
That's all right, mate.
Sorry.
Got it.
Yeah.
Were you gonna say anything or?
No, you just go straight in. No, it's just there was too much silence.
Cool. Yeah, I think I probably agree with the sentiment. I mean. I don't want to sort of change my tune for when we spoke last week completely, because I think it'd be pretty foolish off the back of two glorified pre-season friendlies. But I think the fact we've added Adam May, I think the fact that Cundy looks good means that I'm not as negative as I was sort of going into Birmingham specifically. I think this is going to be a really tough year for us. I think... Like I've said, I think we're relying on a lot to go right for us, and maybe not a lot of logic, which suggests that it all will. I think if everything goes right and, you know, one of managers the squad really, really cleverly, and people stay fit, and there's, you know, good competition for places, you know, we could have a crack at the top seven, but. I think realistically, it, you know, it'll probably be a similar season to last year in quite a lot of respects. But I think what we will see is certainly a smaller squad, one which we can relate to a bit more, I think, which is important. Hopefully some younger players pushing on a little bit more. But, you know, we know how League Two is. There's probably going to be three or four teams at the top and three or four teams at the bottom who are obviously respectively really good and really crap. We're probably not going to be part of either of those. Hopefully not going to be either of the latter, but and between the rest, there's not much. So we'll see how it goes. you know, the big caveat again is that we might add one or two throughout the transfer window, and if we do that, you know, then I think we're looking okay. But as is, which is what we have to judge it on, I'll probably say pretty similar to Arwen. I'll probably say maybe 15th to like 17th or something like that, which is a bit depressing to predict on what I think has been a reasonably positive pod. But I don't think there'll be too many people who would disagree with that either.
So much positivity after that EFL trophy game. So much that we spoke about that compared to like never mentioning those games ever before. It's warped the pod slightly. For me, yeah, it's hard to disagree with what's been said before. The lads say about the small squad, I think it's safe to say it's the smallest squad we've had since we've been back in the Football League. It's the smallest budget I would assume that we've had since we've been back in the Football League. And I think that will have its impact. You know, I think the club have recruited very well. They recruited key areas, good profiles, and there's talent in the squad. And I think the club have been very frugal, and I think they will blood the youngsters, like Tom says, and that will benefit us long term. The big thing for me is there is potential for it to all unravel quite quickly. There's an inexperienced manager. There's a small squad. If you get injuries to key areas like midfield and defence, it could quickly spiral. Games come quick and fast. You know, you could find yourself sliding down that table and being in a position where you don't want to be. So that's my worry. But the big thing is we're sort of looking at our squad in silo. And in reality, I think, like Tom was saying, positions 9 to 22 in this league probably aren't going to be that different in terms of size and quality. So, yeah, if we could finish anywhere on that kind of sort of chart for me. Personally, I think I'm going to go around the 16th place sort of prediction. I just think this season might be a little bit too soon, but for a few of the players that we've got in the squad. But I really hope that this will be a productive season that builds the squad and Mark Bonner for a really strong following season, which I think there is potential for that to happen.
Well, certainly interesting to see. What none of you touched on, which I think is quite important about this, is that we're recording a pod today. So Cambridge will sign a player tomorrow, which is good, you know, a good job, because every time we record, Cambridge immediately have a hive of Twitter activity and signings and new announcements. So that inevitably will happen again tomorrow. Just for my input, I think the league is going to stay exactly as it is now. I think it's going to be in complete alphabetical order, with Barrow winning the league and Cambridge in fourth. So, interesting to see. And Tranmere and Walsall going down to the conference. So, mark my words, see you next May. Brilliant roundup there of the coming season. And just in any other business, really sad to see an absolute stalwart of the club and an inspiration to a lot of people. The club lost Carol Looker, and Tom's going to say a few words on Carol.
Yeah, you know, hopefully less of a, obviously it is sad news and a massive loss, but hopefully more of a sort of commemorative note sort of thing. Hopefully that's fair. Obviously sad to lose somebody like that who was, I don't think there'll be really too many people who have sort of been to Cambridge, you know, on any sort of regular basis and won't know who she is, what she does. Obviously, a lot of people will probably have known Carol for the work that she did, sort of selling like raffle tickets, that sort of stuff, you know, sort of general, just like charitable work, you know, just really good work for, you know, the kind of passion for the club that I think she had. A lot of us who probably sort of started going to away games on the away travel coach will probably remember a bit more for that. And I don't think it's really an exaggeration to say that the work that she did probably helped hundreds, thousands of people of sort of, you know, young teenage, go to football, you know, made it quite accessible. And it's, you know, the football club's much poorer for you know, obviously no longer having someone like that around. I'm sure there'll be some level of sort of tribute in the pipeline. It's probably not the right time or place to discuss what that is or what that kind of should be. I mean, just to kind of add a bit of a sort of personal touch to it, I think the way that I would sum up the sort of character of sort of who she was in terms of my experiences on the coach. You know, I used to go, as many people would have done, you know, sort of a young lad, essentially. You know, I used to get off at Ely, and, you know, particularly for sort of Tuesday night, you know, longer away games. Maybe you've come back from like Barrow on a Saturday, or you've come back from like Newport away on a Tuesday night. You know, rather than sort of being dropped off after those games, you know, when you're getting back sort of 2-3 in the morning, rather than being dropped off at, you know, the other side of Ely and having to walk back, you know, she was always very, very short, you know, very, very careful to make sure that, you know, I was dropped off at the end of my road, which is not something that I think many other football clubs, many other people running any sort of service like that would do. And I think it just goes a long way to show the sort of dedication that she had to it, and you know, the kind of sort of person she was. So yeah, really, really sad news, and yeah, someone who I'm sure will be missed.
Yeah, very touching words. Thank you, Tom. And the game against Carlisle, with or without fans on Saturday, will be certainly a strange place without Carol. But yeah, lovely words and a good way to end the pod. Tom Walker, thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much, mate. Good to be back.
Jordan Warland, thank you.
Yeah, thank you, everyone. Hopefully see you at the Abbey.
And thank you, Owen Kiernan.
Yeah, thank you. Look forward to Saturday.